I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 195 of the Intercooler Podcast with me, Dan Prosser, Andrew Frankel, my co-host, sitting opposite me.
Yeah.
In a studio.
I'm not used to this.
This is the first time. Strange. First time we've done this. Yeah. We're trying out a new professional podcast studio. It means we can sit in front of each other and actually be in the same room and have a proper conversation. They're better conversations that way, I think, when you're in the same room.
Yeah.
We've got professional, really good quality recording equipment. We've got cameras. So those of you...
Yeah, I'm not sure they're an advantage.
So those of you watching on YouTube, hopefully this is a bit better than the two of us peering into the little webcams built into our laptops. We can also get guests in. And we can put them up on the big screen. So doing it this way hopefully elevates the whole podcast, hopefully makes it a much better listening and watching experience.
Is this not now technically a vodcast?
I think it probably is.
Wow.
Let's not use that word, though. No, it's terrible. Okay. We're talking about the German Autobahn this week, but... Yeah. We did weird engine configurations last week, and I think you've got a couple more that have sprung to mind.
Well, yes. It was amazing. The amount of people who got in touch with me and said that was really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I thought it was just a very strange one to do. But anyway, it seems to have resonated. So, yes, two more. And neither of these ever went into a car, so far as I'm aware. So I will be brief, but they are so utterly bonkers. So one of them is called a Napier Deltic.
Go on.
Okay. Napier Deltic was an 18-cylinder, two-stroke, supercharged diesel. And if that sounds nuts, it's nothing compared to... It's a triangular engine. Okay? It's a triangular... If you look at it, what you will see is... And it's also got an opposing piston. So we talked about this bit in the last one, where the pistons form the combustion chamber. Mm. So if you think of a triangle... Each leg of the triangle has two pistons hurtling towards each other, and when they meet, they go bang and prism back. Okay, and you've got that new three legs. Okay, and at each corner of the triangle, you have a crankshaft. So you've got three crankshafts, six pistons, three cylinders, and then you multiply it up until you've got 18 cylinders. And these were used in motor torpedo boats. They were used in locomotives. They were actually really pretty successful. You can get about 2,500 horsepower out of them. And yeah, I just thought I'd mention it because it's probably just a look at. Go and look up a Napier Deltic. There's actually quite a good demonstration on Wikipedia of how it operates. And it looks completely nuts. But anyway, the other one was a Rolls-Royce engine called the Vulture.
Good name.
Good name, okay? The Vulture was, would you believe it? And this was an engine which was made. It was used. I'll tell you about the aircraft it went into in a minute. It was an absolutely serious. It was an X-24.
Okay, right.
Okay, which is actually unlike the Napier Deltic, is incredibly easy to explain. Think of a V-12 and another V12 underneath it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So you basically have two V12, and one of them's upside down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all mounted onto a common crank. So you wow. have four banks of six cylinders to make 24 cylinders. How will they manage to get, you know, the oil system working, getting all the oils out the heads that were upside down? I don't know how that, well, in fact, it clearly didn't work. It went into a thing called the Avro Manchester. And the Avro Manchester, if you go and look at an Avro Manchester, you'll think that looks familiar. Because when that failed, it was a two-engined heavy bomber. They thought, the Vulture's not worked. What we'd better do is give it four smaller engines. And they called the result of that the Lancaster.
Ah, okay. There you go.
So the Manchester was the two-engine version of the Lancaster, which came first. And these Vultures, they were so unreliable. They just used to go pop all the time. And they caused the... Well, they were a very substantial contributing factor to the failure of that aircraft, and a very substantial... You know, but for the Vulture, who knows whether the Merlin, the V-12, would ever have found its way into the Lancaster. Who knows whether the Lancaster would even have been created. So at least we have that to thank it for. And there, I shall promise you, I shall close the subject of weird configurations, at least until I can think of another one.
Yeah, or someone gets in touch, as many of you have done.
Yes, and said, what about the such and such?
Yeah, well, thank you for everyone who did do exactly that. It was a good fun one, that episode. Hopefully, well, I learned a lot. Maybe one or two of you did as well. But let's move on to this week's topic.
Yeah.
The German Autobahn. So yes. Germany's motorway network.
Yes.
And as we know, you can drive as fast as you like on the Autobahn.
Yeah, right.
In theory. Yeah. In theory. Yeah, I mean, we want to talk about it because it must just be totally normal to a typical German driver, but to us, it's still a bit exciting when you get onto the Autobahn and you see that de-restricted sign.
Yeah.
And it's a funny thing because you know that there isn't a speed limit there, technically.
Yeah.
When you go into a de-restricted zone. But it still feels like you're being quite naughty, going above 80, above 100, in, you know, into the really quite fast.
Yeah.
150 plus. It feels like you're being extremely naughty.
Well, it is extreme. Well, I mean, it depends. It's just like all these things, isn't it? It just depends what's there and around you at the time.
Mm.
There are times when, you know, I've cruised down German autobahns at 150 miles an hour, a speed which would bang you up in any British prison for quite a long period of time. And I would defy anyone to say that what I was doing was dangerous because there was nothing on it. The conditions were perfect and I was in a very, very well-engineered modern car. There are other times when you're doing like 110 and you're thinking, this is properly sketchy. It's you can't just say, you know, they're safe or they're unsafe or they're right or they're wrong. As you say, a lot of the time when you are doing it, you are sort of thinking, I can't quite believe I'm allowed to do this.
Yeah, yeah. It is amazing.
Yeah.
So we'll come to some of our own stories about driving on the Autobahn and perhaps the reality of driving on the Autobahn as well.
Yeah.
But let's do a little bit of background. The Autobahn network has a total length of just over 8,000 miles.
Wow.
Almost 8,200 miles in 2021, which seems like a lot, actually, I have to say. In de-restricted zones, there is an advisory 130 kilometre per hour or 81 mile per hour limit. It's advisory. So it's
meaningless.
Well, sort of. It's not illegal to drive faster than that. But if you have a collision going more than 81 miles per hour, there can be increased liability. Mm. You can be, you can be, the law can come at you harder if you were driving
faster. And I think I'm right in saying that even if there isn't a collision, but there's a, I don't know, there's a policeman at the side of the road or whatever, and they see you weaving through the traffic at 170 miles an hour, you can still be done for dangerous driving.
Yeah, which is fair enough, isn't
it? Absolutely.
It's not just speed that's the issue here. No. In 2017, there was a report that revealed that 70% of the Autobahn network only had the advisory limit, so essentially no limit. There was a small percentage with temporary speed limits due to weather or traffic, and 23% had a permanent speed limit. So actually, it is
That really surprises me,
yeah.
Because when I'm on autobahns, I seem to be always in the bit where there's a permanent speed limit. Mm. And then you get these little stretches where it's on your woo, and then, you know, 5 miles later, you're back into the, I must be driving in the wrong bit of Germany.
I know, but it's 70%.
I find that hard to believe.
Well, yeah, so, but this is interesting. On a six-lane section of autobahn, so three lanes either side, yeah. either direction, average speeds in free-flowing conditions, so decent weather, not too busy, 88 miles per hour for cars.
That's actually quite fast, isn't it?
It's clipping along that, isn't it? Average.
Average. Average. Because there will always be, you know, people doing 60, won't there? Which means for every one of those, there's somebody else doing three figures.
Mm.
Yeah. But actually, that's not so surprising, because some people on the autobahn, and you and I will have both come across them, for them, the correct speed is as fast as they can make their car go. Mm. And they sit there, don't they, in the outside lane with an indicator on permanently. Mm. And you can see them coming up behind you. And if you can't get out of the way, or, I don't know, choose not to, it is stunning how fast they come up on you and how close to you they are prepared to get before they just land on the anchors. Because they just presume, there's this automatic presumption that you're going to leap out of the way.
Yeah.
And I find that genuine. I find it intimidating and I find it scary. And I really am not a fan of that kind of driving at all.
When was the M1 first put down? 70s or 60s, was it?
1960s.
So the German Autobahn network is much older. There was a section.
I think our first bit of motorway was, I think it was the Preston Bypass.
That's true.
Actually now part of the M6.
Yes, that's true.
And that was in the 1960s.
Yeah. Okay. So there was a section from Frankfurt to Darmstadt opened in 1935.
Yeah.
Very straight section.
Yes.
And of course, no limit then still, or even back then. And the Grand Prix teams would use it. Mercedes-Benz, also Union.
They did a speed record test there.
Yeah.
They built special cars. Mm. Incredible, beautiful aerodynamic machines to see, and all they would do is go down that stretch of road from Frankfurt to Darmstadt, which you can still do, and see how fast they can go. And they went unbelievably fast.
So Rudolf Caracciola, I think his record is set, and the record is at 268 miles per hour.
Yeah. But then...
Back then.
Yeah. But Bernd Rosemeyer.
Yeah.
In 1938, he went out... I think it's a two-way average, isn't it? Because I think he'd gone fast on the correct year.
Had he?
But there was a crosswind, and they said to him, you don't want to go back. Really bad idea. I mean, that is properly sketchy.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going back.
And he did, yeah.
And that was it.
Big crash.
Terrible. Everybody thinks it was literally a crosswind that caught the car. These bullets, these cars which are... all about just pure aerodynamic efficiency. Nothing to do with downforce, nothing to do with trying to
streamline, aren't they?
Just pure streamliners.
Yeah.
And not even Rosemeyer, who was widely and quite rightly regarded as, certainly in Germany, probably in the world, with the possible only other exception of Nuvolari, as the most talented driver of his day. Not even he could catch it. Mm. And the car sailed off into the woods, and very sadly, that was that for Bernd Rosemeyer.
Oh, gosh. So we all see those emergency telephones on Britain's motorway network, but they have them in Germany as well, 17,000 of them.
Gosh.
And even today, when we all have mobile phones in our pockets, connected to the car probably, there are 150 calls made each day using those phones. And they automatically alert the operator to where the caller is.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite clever. Now... one of the interesting things about the the Autobahn network is that the German car makers, most of them, signed up to the gentleman's agreement, didn't they? 155 miles per hour. And even now, you still see that quoted as the top speed for a lot of cars. But I think the likes of BMW, Mercedes, Audi, they've, particularly with their ultra high performance cars, they've let that gentleman's agreement slip, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's become a marketing opportunity because, you know, well, a sales opportunity because they will now sell you an upgrade pack.
Yeah, they will.
Which will allow it to do, you know, your car to do 186 miles an hour, 300 kilometers per hour. But they charge money for that, even though it's clearly all you have to do is remove a line of software.
Yeah.
It's also another reason that they weren't too sad about it was... you've got to engine it. If a car, you know, let's take a big 7 Series BMW or a big S-Class Mercedes, which, because it's so aerodynamic and really quite powerful, could probably do the thick end of 200 miles an hour. Well, you've got to engineer a car to a completely different standard if it's going to do 200. You've got to engineer the brakes, the suspension, the tyres. You end up with a much more expensive car, probably with a far worse ride. I mean, this is something that Bentley, who've never restricted the top speed of their cars, have always, you know, found very difficult. Was, you know, because they engineer their cars to be safe and, you know, to do what they do at, you know, over 200 miles an hour.
Mm.
155, completely different kettle of fish, completely different. So you get a much cheaper, easier car, which for almost all people, almost all the time, will be better because it'll cost less to buy and it'll be more comfortable because it'll ride better because it doesn't have to have, you know, stiffer suspension, firmer, thicker tyre sidewalls and so on.
But the fact that you can drive very quickly on the autobahns, that must have influence the design and engineering of German cars profoundly over the years. And not just how they are designed and built, but the types of car that they design and build in Germany. I mean, you can compare them to French cars. You can spot them a mile off. You could look at the silhouette of a French car and a German car and know which is which, probably. So having that Autobahn network probably means that the German manufacturers and German buyers have favoured saloons, often bigger ones, often powerful ones, often quite sporting ones. So it's that one law that there is no restriction on speed on parts of the German Autobahn has massively influenced that whole industry.
Yeah, and it's not just the design, it's also the engineering of it. I mean, it's less so now, but there was a time when Audis were engineered to have this massive dead patch in their steering just off centre. And it's, you know, I think they used to call it the sneeze factor. And it was there so that if for any reason, you know, I don't know, a child reached over or you were distracted or you sneezed or whatever, and you were doing 150 miles an hour down your autobahn and there was an unintended input into the steering, the car wouldn't fly off the road. Which, you know, in that particular, very specific,
That's a good thing.
Pretty rare set of circumstances is a great thing.
Yeah.
The whole of the rest of the time,
it's not what you want.
It's a total pain. It's not what you want.
Yeah, that is interesting. So, this 155 mile an hour gentleman's agreement, they sort of play a little bit fast and loose with it now. But as you say, in many ways, it's a sensible idea because you do actually compromise a car when you make it capable of far higher top speeds.
And the other thing is, 155 miles an hour, I mean, you've done it, I've done it, plenty of people listening to this have done it. I don't think many people who wanged into their 155 mile an hour speed limit on their cars were sat there thinking, oh, this is a bit dull, I want to go faster. I want to, it's in a public arena where there are other people and trucks, and, you know, you always have to assume that no one has seen you, nobody knows you're there because you don't know that they have. 155 miles an hour is plenty. And I guess we're going to get on to the sort of the ethical rights and wrongs of speed limits. And I'm sort of slightly in two minds about it. But, you know, what I wouldn't say is that, oh, you know, 155 is terribly restrictive because it just spoils your fun so much. It's cobblers. 155 is plenty.
That is enough.
Yeah, on a public road.
That really is. Yes, so this is a huge debate in Germany. It's actually an extremely contentious topic, the de-restriction of the autobahns.
Yeah.
It's a massive thing. And every election season it comes round. It's a proper political lightning rod, isn't it? I don't think it's going to be sensible for us to weigh in and tell all the, you know, the German people what it is they should be doing. But we can discuss the sides of the argument, can't we? We need to talk about safety. I've dug up some interesting stuff on this. Now, clearly, we all know that you can make statistics argue whatever case you want to argue for you, can't you? You can cook the books any way you like.
Yeah.
So let me just share two different statistics that perhaps represent both sides of the argument. In 2014, autobahns carried 31% of motorized traffic while accounting for just 11% of traffic deaths.
Yeah.
So that's an Autobahn fatality rate of 1.6 deaths per billion kilometres travelled, compared to 4.6 on urban streets and 6.5 on rural roads. So far and away, the safest roads in Germany are autobahns, even without a speed limit.
Measured that way. Yeah.
However, as many people have pointed out, you don't have traffic coming towards you.
No.
You don't have pedestrians. You don't have cyclists.
Yeah.
So it's perhaps not a fair comparison. But the difference, 1.6 deaths per million kilometres compared to 4.6 on urban streets, 6.5 on rural roads, it does perhaps suggest that there are more pressing issues than the de-restriction of the Autobahn. If you want to reduce the number of deaths on the road, maybe you look elsewhere, don't you?
Well, I think that is a very good point. And I think clearly there's an awful lot of work going on in those areas. Mm. But it would be interesting, I don't know if you have this, to see the per kilometre death rate on a de-restricted piece of Autobahn compared to a restricted piece of Autobahn.
Yes.
Have you got that?
It's presented in a slightly different way. So 26% fewer people died on Autobahns with a speed limit per kilometre. So like for like, 26% fewer. So yes, more people do die on de-restricted than on restricted stretches of Autobahn.
Okay, that interests me because I thought the number would be higher than that. Mm. I thought it would be like, you know, you're twice as likely to die on a de-restricted as on a restricted bill, or four times as likely.
Mm.
But that clearly is not the case.
No. And that is like for like per kilometre. So it's not a night and day difference, is it really?
No.
Which I find it very interesting indeed. Now, perhaps the other stat that we can discuss is how Germany's motorway network compares to others in Europe. The safest in terms of deaths per billion kilometres travelled, Denmark's 0.72. Then it's us, the United Kingdom, 1.16.
Yeah, but that's only because our roads are so congested, you can't go fast enough to kill yourself.
Possibly.
No, I think it's a real factor. I think it's a real factor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that we have, for any reason, I can't think of any other reason why. I mean, it sure as hell ain't smart motorways, is it?
No.
There's no other reason why our figures should be, you know, better than anyone other than Denmark's.
So after Denmark and the UK, you've got France, Austria, and then Germany. So Germany is not top of the table, but it's not at the bottom by any means. And actually, it's ahead of Finland, Belgium, the Czech Republic, Switzerland.
Yeah. And even Slovenia. France, you know, France has 130 kilometre speed limit. Lots of other countries, 120. Mm. And yet France is, you know... But again, I don't know. It's strange. I'm not sure that I think you can go reading all sorts of things into it. I think, as you said, you're absolutely right. You can turn these statistics. Yeah. You can sort of bend and meld them any way you like to prove whatever argument is you're trying to put forward.
You can.
Yeah.
Just as an aside, let me give you another stat, which is eye-opening, actually. Germany, 1.74 deaths per billion kilometres travelled.
Yeah.
1.74. The United States... What speed limit do they have?
Well, it's all varies, over the place, doesn't it? It varies. Anything from 55 to 85.
Yeah, okay. 3.38.
Double.
Yeah. Yeah.
Double.
That's okay. Extraordinary.
Because in America, I don't know, so this is me leaping wildly to conclusions, but there is no lane discipline in America. Undertaking is not only done... It's entirely legal.
Yeah, it's not even... There's no requisite for...
No, absolutely not.
No requirement for lane discipline, no, is there?
Absolutely. Yeah. None whatever.
Mm.
So, also, you have massive rigs in America, don't you?
Mm.
If one of those, I don't know, has a puncture or the driver falls asleep or whatever...
That's a problem.
It's just going to take out more cars than, you know, than anything smaller that you get in Europe.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So this whole debate about whether a blanket speed limit needs to be introduced on the Autobahn is a huge topic in Germany.
There's also, presumably, there's an environmental debate around it too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, the faster you go, the more energy you consume.
Yeah, exactly.
And the more you spew out the back. Yeah. You know, that's just a fact.
And, you know, you and I both know, because we both live reasonably near it, you know, the if you're on the M4 in South Wales around Newport, there's a 50-mile-an-hour speed limit on it, and it's literally there, or the Welsh government says it's literally there because of air quality levels. That's what it's there for. It's there to reduce emissions. I would imagine in Germany there aren't that many cars going that fast to make a massive difference, but maybe there is. But I mean, but clearly the environmental argument is one that's only going to get stronger. Yeah.
So there's the German Auto Club, which is one of the groups that campaigns for things to be left the way they are. They like the de-restricted Autobahn. And the slogan that they've been using since the 1970s is free driving for free citizens. And even in that slogan, you can tell how this topic becomes polarizing, divisive. It becomes a left-right issue. It's, as with so much political discourse, there's very little nuance. And whichever side of the argument you're on, you make it bigger than it is. So it comes down to freedom.
Yeah.
A citizen's freedom.
Yeah, but also, you know, but then the other side would say, yes, but it is my right as a free citizen not to be killed by some twat doing 170 miles an hour.
And it's hard to argue with that, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a really, really difficult issue. I have, I think on this podcast, certainly in print over the times, I have railed against this idea that speed kills, okay? And that's always, you see it on the signs, you know, the road safety lobby always says speed kills. Speed never killed anybody, only its inappropriate use.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are times, as I've said, when you can be doing a three-figure speed on a deserted Autobahn in a modern car on a sunny day, and that is safe. There are times when you can be doing 40 miles an hour outside of school at chucking out time when that is utterly lethal. Without context, the speed is a meaningless measure. And you know, I am someone who would restrict people's right to live their lives the way they want to at gunpoint. I think that generally speaking, if in doubt, you should be allowed to do it as long as it doesn't interfere with anybody else. And that is the problem, is that it does interfere with other people. You know, completely innocent outsiders who are entirely law abiding do get caught up. And I don't, I mean, the thing is that, you know, anybody's expecting you and I to sit here and go, well, the answer is clearly this. This is what you need. I don't have an answer.
No.
I don't like the idea of anyone saying, well, you can't do this, you can't do that. But at the same time, I think you have to recognise that these things have impacts beyond the individual who is doing it. And is that fair? Is that right? Is that a fair price? Is that a sensible price to pay to protect what people regard to as their civil liberties? It's an impossible issue because it's been rattling on for as long as it has. But it is interesting that almost every other country in the world, apart from the Isle of Man, and there will be one or two other places I don't know about, have taken the decision that actually, for the greater good, we do need to limit. And then you get into the argument as well, what should that limit be?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, our limit of 70 miles an hour was set back in the 1960s when, you know, 70 miles an hour was a proper speed for a car to be going. You know, there'd be lots of cars there which would barely do 70 miles an hour. They had terrible tyres. They had terrible brakes. They folded up like, you know, crisp packets if they ever hit anything. And yet here we are in 2024. And, you know, cars are massively fast, massively safe, stop brilliant. They do all these things fantastically well. And yet we are subjected to the same restrictions. And people will say, they'll prove, what if you do 80 miles an hour, you'll kill this many people, you do 70 miles. And it's like the sort of the Welsh speed limit in that's just come in towns and villages across Wales of 20 miles an hour, blanket. Without even getting into all the laws of unintended consequences about how people behave and how frustrated they get and the dangers that they create of doing 20 miles an hour. The argument for that is that you'll kill fewer people at 20 miles an hour than you will at 30. But you'll kill even fewer people at 10.
Mm.
Or if you just don't get in your car.
Mm.
So where do you draw the line?
Mm.
I don't have an answer for that. But it's, you know, it's a debate that goes on and on and on. I mean, for myself, I quite like the idea that there is still somewhere, and this is just me talking very personally, that you can go and let a car really go.
Yeah.
But I would only ever do it as someone who's been doing this for a while and understands a bit about cars and driving fast in an environment which I thought was completely safe. Mm. And I know exactly how far into the distance you need to be looking, how clear the road has to be, and so on and so forth. And actually, the truth is that there aren't very, even on the unrestricted things, and this is something which we'll probably get onto. You can be on an unrestricted autobahn. That doesn't mean you're going to be able to go flat out. Because, you know, autobahns are busy.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I mean, we'll come on to the reality of driving on these roads in a moment. But as I've said, it's such a massive topic in Germany. And actually, it goes right to the heart of the German identity, of German culture. Because this is very interesting. It was in December 1952 that all speed limits on all roads were abolished.
Gosh,
because Germans voted against them because they seemed like Nazi relics. And this was about Germany throwing off the shackles and emerging.
But they didn't
new...
dig up the autobahns, which were also Nazi relics.
Well, that's true. That's true. And then slowly, at state level, speed limits were introduced in town, on rural roads, but not on the autobahn. And so when people talk about putting a speed limit on the autobahn, others get so irate, so worked up about it because it's such an emotionally charged topic, reaching all the way back to the end of the Nazi regime. It's a powerful, potent thing.
But it was almost a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Well, that's right. And there is the head of the Green Party in, I think it's Hesse, Tariq Al-Wazir. He's really campaigning for speed limits. And he says, the speed limit in Germany has a similar status as the right to bear arms in the American debate. At some point, a speed limit will become reality here, and soon we will not be able to remember the time before. It's like the smoking ban in restaurants.
I think that's a difficult one, isn't it? Because, God, we can get ourselves into so much trouble here. But the right to bear arms in the States, you know, look at you were wheeling out statistics earlier, and we concluded that we were surprised by, okay, more people tend to die on unrestricted road, but it's not massively wildly more.
No.
Look at gun crime in the US and how the right to bear arms has created a situation which is unique in the world in terms of the number of people who die as a result of that right. You know, so you're not really comparing like with like.
It's not a comparison you should make lightly.
No, not at all.
You really need to think about how you back that up before you say that, don't you? It's a bold thing to say. Mm. So it's a huge debate in Germany, and we're not going to solve it now, nor are we going to try. But we can talk about what it's like to drive on an autobahn.
Yeah.
Because I feel the same as you. I mean, I've done it plenty of times. I've been reasonably quick. I think 170 something plus, maybe 175.
Yeah.
Quick enough. But every time I've done it, you're doing those speeds for short bursts.
Mm.
You're looking miles down the road because the roads are busy. And it's just a matter of time before someone pulls out in front of you. And you have to back right off again.
I think it is the automotive equivalent of going to a McDonald's.
Mm.
It is a, it's an instant sort of sugar hit, high, whatever, that ultimately leaves you feeling completely empty.
Yeah.
Mm. I think it is one of the most overrated automotive pastimes you can indulge in. As you say, the first thing that happens is, you know, the first time, I can remember this so clearly, I was on my way to my first ever job at the Nürburgring, and I was in a Porsche 968 Club Sport, and I can remember getting onto my first ever stretch of unrestricted autobahn and just thinking, well, hey, let's
go.
But I couldn't, because there was just too much traffic around.
Mm.
And then, you know, you'll come over Browver Hill and you'll think, oh, it's a bit clearer now. And so you'll go, and then something will pull out in front of you and you're on the brakes. And, you know, unless you're going to go and do something specific, like go to what you know is a very quiet stretch and you've gone there for that reason, and then get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and then, you know, get in your car. And there are lots of car journalists. I mean, I can remember that back in my auto car days, a motoring journalist who many listening to this will have heard of, David Vivian, and a chap called John Lyon, who started the High Performance Club, went to Germany to do 200 miles an hour on a public road in a Lamborghini Diablo. And the opening picture of this story was a sort of very, very sort of fuzzy in-car shot in which you could just about see the speedometer pointing at 200 miles an hour. And, you know, and the efforts they went to, even then, when the roads were a hell of a lot quieter than they are now, to find somewhere where you can. And the whole point was, can you safely do 200 miles an hour on a public road? Their conclusion, not mine, theirs, at the time, was that they could. But you had to have basically the fastest car in the world.
Mm.
You had to have two professional drivers. You had to get up at 3:30 in the morning. And you had to be, you know, on the quieter stretch of unrestricted autobahn in Germany. Now, that's an awful lot of, you know, dots to join up, isn't it, before you can actually say you can go and do that. And for the most part, it is just sort of, you know, a quick squirt here and there. You know, what you're not going to do on an unrestricted autobahn in Germany in any normal set of circumstances is just sort of, you know, put 150 miles into an hour.
No.
It's just not going to happen. No. You're not going to get there much quicker. You know, I think that point to point, I think that that you would be faster in France obeying the speed limit than you would be in Germany, because you have to pay to go on the autoroutes, and the country itself is much less populous, and therefore the roads are that much quieter. So you can in France, you know, put your cruise on 140Ks and just go. Mm. You can't do that on the autobahns. I think. Because, you know, we know, don't we, that people do go to Germany because there is this promise of being able to go really well. And apart from anything else, God, I'm going to go off on one in a minute. apart from anything else, even if they were completely empty, you know, driving in a straight line just isn't an awful lot of fun. That's not what we love cars for. You know, if you think of the cars we love best, none of them are because they'll do 200 miles an hour. It's because they feel right, they handle beautifully. You know, you feel, they feel alive, you feel alive as a result. It's not because they've got huge amounts of power and are very good at going in a straight line, because there's no skill in that. And ultimately, you're just sitting there in your chair with your air conditioning on, waiting for a number to come up on a dial while taking probably quite a big risk.
Mm.
I just wouldn't bother. Or do it once
and
think, well, okay, I've ticked that box, and then you never have to do it again.
Mm. The other thing is, if you've got a top speed 150-odd, okay, I'm not talking a restricted speed with a car that might otherwise do 180 or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're clipping along at 150, close to the car's maximum speed,
yeah,
you're burning a hell of a lot of fuel at that point, aren't you?
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to sit there doing 200 miles,
because
you'll be pulling over to fill the bloody tank.
Yeah. And also, you know, if your car's top speed is 150 miles an hour, you won't believe how long it'll actually take to get there.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be sitting there at 130, you'll be thinking, well, this isn't accelerating very fast. And you'll be going 131, 132, and it gets slower and slower and slower. And we know this from back in the days when we used to spend our lives as, you know, full-time road testers, maxing cars on the Millbrook Bowl and places like that. It takes miles before you'll get to your car's top speed. So anybody thinks, oh, you know, I'm going to go and max the old girl, you almost certainly won't, because you'll need so much space. So that's a, you know, that's a red herring as well.
Mm. Yeah. You're right about France, though. Often when you do a trip through Europe, and I found myself on German autobahns, they are busy. There's a lot of traffic, a lot of haulage on them. Mm. lots of roadworks as well. Very, very narrow roadworks, in my experience. And so they can be quite stressful. They can be hard work. And then you go across the border into France, and often they're so lovely and clear. Mm. There's no one around.
Yeah.
You can't go absolutely flat out. But as you say, you're probably covering ground just as quick.
Last summer, I was in Croatia, and I had to do a one-day hit from the bottom to the top of the country. And their motorway network appears to have been built last week.
Mm.
The limit's 130 km, and there's nobody on it.
Mm.
And you can really, really cover the ground in the way there's no way you would be able to do in Germany. And the other thing is in Germany, and you know you will have had this too, is that when you do have an accident there, or when you have, but when there is an accident there, it tends not to be a small one.
Mm.
And the amount of times in the, whatever it is, 35 years I've been doing the job, I found myself just sat on an autobahn, or actually stood outside the car, because the whole thing's been shut because somebody has binned it in a fairly catastrophic way. And there's nothing quite like slowing you down for, you know, having to spend 3 hours stood at the side of a motorway waiting for, you know, the wrecking crew to come and clear it up.
Mm. Quite. So this sort of idea, it's almost a fantasy of sitting at 150 mile an hour plus in your big German saloon car, covering ground at a hell of a lick. It's not really, maybe some people do, I don't know. But
it is a fantasy.
Yeah.
There's a German banker who has, or had, probably still does have, a McLaren F1. And I can remember seeing that car back at Woking where it was being serviced, and they'd interrogated it, and they discovered it had done 200 miles an hour every day, because that was this bloke's commute to work in his F1, and he would just go down the autobahn at 200 miles. And I presume he went to work very early when there was nothing on the autobahn. I'm not saying that it is simply impossible to do it, but for the vast majority of people, in the vast majority of circumstances, for the vast majority of time, it's one of the most overrated pastimes that there is.
Mm. That's right. What I was going to say, the thing that appeals to me about the autobahn, and it would be, I think it would be a pity if this was lost, it's going back to one of the stats I offered earlier. The average speed, on a 6-lane clear motorway in good conditions is 88 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So you can sit at 90, maybe 100, quite comfortably.
Yeah.
And really cover ground at that speed.
Yeah, but that's in good conditions when there's not much traffic, and those conditions are rare in Germany.
Mm.
You often get bad weather there. You always have heavy traffic. You know, I'm sure that is right in ideal conditions, but you know, that isn't the real world. So I'm sounding like I've got a complete downer on these unrestricted. I don't. And for myself, you know, put a gun to my head, I wouldn't vote in favour of having those restrictions lifted.
No.
All I'm saying is that for anybody listening to this who hasn't gone and done it,
who thinks it's a driving mecca and you're going to have the time of your life,
just go and do a, you know, go and do a. An auto test and an MX-5 in a car park. You'll just have so much more fun.
Yeah, it's true, actually.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah, you will. So I think I agree with you. I'm not in favour of ever more legislation, ever more restrictions. But clearly, if you're going to permit people to travel extremely quickly amongst other people, other traffic, those people have to really think about what they're doing. And we haven't even discussed maintaining your car properly and your tyres for those speeds. There are so many things you have to think about.
And, for, you know, you can put up all the advisories you like and do everything, but, you know, idiots exist.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not a bar to owning a fast car to be an idiot.
No.
You know, you can still do it. And, I mean, there is this argument. You don't really hear it anymore, I guess because of the rise of track days and that sort of thing. But people will say, oh, yeah, the moment they put an 80 mile an hour speed limit on the autobahn, what possible reason is there for a car manufacturer to build a car that does more than 80 miles an hour?
Mm.
Because that would be them inciting their owners to break the law.
Mm.
Because they can do speeds that can, they can capable of speeds which are legal nowhere in the world. So then all cars have a blanket top speed. You get to 80 miles an hour and just stop.
I don't want that to happen.
It's funny, isn't it?
It is.
We don't want
funny.
That to happen.
No. I'm not sure I can satisfactorily but the
moment
why,
but yeah. You I mean, you understand the at least the theory behind it, but the moment it is illegal anywhere in the world to do more than 80 miles an hour,
what's
what
the point?
Possible justification is there for creating a car that does do more than 80 miles an hour? And the answer to that is, of course, there are always racetracks, thank goodness.
Yes, yeah, as long as we've got those.
Yeah.
There we go then, German autobahns. Now, I know that lots of you are going to get in touch with your own experiences, and perhaps you feel particularly strongly one way or the other on the debate that rages on around the autobahn. And I'll be very interested to read your messages, so please do get in touch. We are running out of time, so we need to wrap this one up. We have got a listener question coming up in a moment.
Ooh.
You're going to think it was written by Dan P from just outside Bristol. It wasn't.
Well, specifically, try and trip me up.
No. But before I read it out to you,
I really do not know what these reader questions are. I think people think that sort of Dan tells me what they're going to be a week. I literally have no idea what's coming up.
No, you don't know this one.
No. I'm not that good an actor.
So before we do the listener question, I'm just going to remind you all to rate and review the podcast. That really helps. But also, while you're doing that, just hit the little follow button or the subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel. We do much more than just these videos on our YouTube channel. So hit the subscribe button and check out what we do on YouTube. This one, as I said, it doesn't come from Dan P just outside Bristol. It comes from Sulev, who...
Thank you, Sulev.
Yes, who wants...
I'm not sure of it yet.
It's about the Alpine A110.
Oh, goodness.
But he wants to know what the differences are between the models, because there is now the A110R.
Yes.
Best part of $100,000.
Yes.
I've not actually driven one.
Twice the car. Twice the money, half the car. There you go.
Well, there you go. That might answer the question. But can we just briefly explain what the difference is between an A110...
Oh, can you do
A110S and an A110R. I can do the A110 and the A110S.
So an A110 is what we call a standard car, aka the best car.
Yeah.
It's the cheapest. It has... Well, fill me in when I get wrong. It's got like a 246 horsepower engine.
Yeah, 48, yeah.
Yeah, 248 horsepower engine, and it's absolutely lovely.
Yeah.
So the S is, it's got more power, 296 horsepower?
Yes, I think so. 92 maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's got no more torque because the gearbox is limited. So you only actually feel the extra oomph up the top end.
Yeah.
Put your foot down at 3,000 revs, the same thing happens in both cars. It's got stiffer suspension, is not as good a car because you lose that suppleness, you leave the subtlety, you lose some of the balance. It's, the magic that made us, persuaded us to give it the only 10-star rating we've ever given any car, has gone from that. The A110R...
The only one I haven't driven.
Okay, so the problem with it is, I think it's £96,000.
Yeah.
It's so expensive, and it's a bit lighter. I think it is... In its sort of lightest form, it is under 1,100 kilos.
Mm.
It's got some aero on it. It's got stiffer suspension. It's got Michelin Cup 2 tyres. So what they're trying to do is make a fast one. And in lap time, it is fast. But to drive on the public road, again, it's just not as nice. And it's the difference between fast and fun, isn't it? And we've been down this road many, many times before. And unless you've done it... It's very hard to convey just that sense of inherent rightness that you get in a standard Boggo base A110 on a nice road. The car is so supple. It breathes with the road. And you just think, this is a car that has been set up with me as a driver on a road in mind. And the other cars are sort of, they're variants of that. They're deviations from that. And they may go quick around a track, but I don't care about that.
Mm.
They're just not as good.
Is the R... unbearable on the road, or is
no,
it
not?
It's not
unbearable at all. It's just not as good. No, it's not unbearable at all. I mean, the R is, if there'd never been anything else and they just produce this and go, what do you think of this, guys? We go, wow, that's amazing. Yeah. It's fantastic. But the money is crazy. And although it is much, much faster, and it still handles incredibly well and everything else, it's just not a car that I warm to anything like as much as the original and the standard car.
There you go, Sulev. Thank you for your question. We'll leave it there. Now, next week, we have a guest, a returning guest, Richard Bremner. We're going to talk lots more nonsense about BL, British Leyland, and Rovers, and all sorts.
And also the ones that he owned and has and still owns.
Yeah, because
of which there are an unfathomable number.
It's quite a few.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to that one. Thank you ever so much for listening. Tune back in next week when we've got Richard Bremner back.
See you then.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.